Chapter 76 Redemption. "I will watch tonight, Jen," Maywin insisted. "You provided the victory today, and that is enough. You cannot go on without rest." Jen, eyes heavy, nodded a reply. Embracing his sword, he reclined against the gentle slope of a bulge of white granite rising out of the ground, his cloak behind his head serving as pillow. It had taken nearly 4 hours for him to regain his ability to walk in a straight line, and another 2 for them to catch up to the main body of soldiers. The army had pressed on through the early afternoon, but stopped early for a chance to rest. Maywin and Jen camped well ahead of the rest of the party, both to scout forward and to keep Jen away from those who might recognize him. Behind them on the trail, the soldiers lit fires and started a victory celebration, breaking into song for the first time in weeks. After days of terror, their enemies were finally dead or miles behind and powerless to reach them. Maywin disliked the ruckus and told Jen as much. Jen smiled at her and said nothing. Sitting cross-legged, Maywin watched over her stubborn friend until his chest rose and fell in a regular, slow pattern, and then she rose and turned back toward the trail that ran along the edge of the Blue Canyon. Rather than walk the trail, she skirted along the edge, threading her way between fragrant boughs of spruce and pine. Moonlight slanted through the boles along the edge of the forest, providing just enough illumination for her to see with clarity in the darkness. She drank from a gurgling spring that filled a small pool near the trail, the stars and dark trees reflecting on its surface until she dipped her hand in and scattered them. The water, borne underground from the mountains to the east, refreshed her and calmed her mind, and she needed all the peace she could muster. As she approached the camp, singing, dancing, and shouting drowned out the sounds of wind, water, and birds and set her on edge. Humans lived short lives and possessed even shorter memories, and whatever Jen's indifference to the noise, Maywin knew that if the revelers had her recollections, they would still be cowering, cold and silent, in the hopes they could escape notice of things they could not fathom or imagine. The victory they won today meant nothing other than immediate survival. Mikik had far worse creations than Uyumark and blood beetles at his disposal, and when he found out that his army was defeated, he would send those horrors to find them. He probably had already. Maywin stayed well outside the light of the fires and the celebrating, giving sign to the sentries of her approach. The Shalane's camp always lay in the center of the caravan. The fine, colorful tents and camp arrangements had been left behind long ago, complicating the task of finding where the frail queen slept, but as soon as she saw Dacen standing guard over an improvised lean-to, she knew where the young woman lay. Maywin sat on a bed of pine needles, just out of Dacen's notice, and started her long watch as a favor to Jen. She could just make out the Shalane huddled in a ball and leaning against the tree trunk that formed part of her shelter. Since losing her mother, the Shalane had fallen into even greater despondency than before, talking little, eating little, and caring nothing for soldiers, strategy, or the impressive scenery around them. While Jen's death and the tortured appearance of her skin had started her withdrawal, the departure of her mother into the hands of Aethon's men in a ruse to save her had transformed the young woman into a hunching, bitter recluse. Lord Kildan and Aethrys no longer sought her for counsels or approvals of their decisions, and her role as queen no longer meant anything to anyone save Jen. Dacen and Aethrys did their best to revive her spirits, but every day the Shalane grew more feeble and more apathetic, and Maywin worried. Dacen's discomfort in her presence was obvious. The council had wished Lord Kildan's oldest son to marry her, to unite Tolnor and Rugoth under one rule, but it was clear, and to his credit, that her former protector would not force the act on her. Maywin wondered if he did this out of respect for the Shalane's pain, or because her pitiful state dulled whatever feelings he might have had for her when she walked beautiful and vibrant. Maywin sighed. While she cared for the girl and respected her for the pain she endured, Maywin agreed with most of the talk she heard swirling around her. The Shalane's part in the shaping of Kihal had failed and was over. The infant that was to be God had been unmade by Mikik, and the mighty warrior that was to save him had been killed by the same power. Forcing the Shalane to lead or to think she had further part to play only tormented her more, and it was obvious she hadn't the thought or wish to do anything but slink away from the world. But each time Maewyn broached the topic with Jen, as she had earlier that day, he would disagree vehemently, claiming that if Mikkik still had interest in her, then she should not be cast aside and ignored. Whatever his words, Maewyn suspected Jen watched over the chalet not from any desire to see her healed to seek some new destiny, but because he cared for her. Maewyn had witnessed centuries of human passion, hate, love, hope, and despair, and Jen's unwavering and disinterested love for the chalet broke through her ancient, often cynical perception of the world and touched her heart. Aldredan Mikmir was the only other human she had known who possessed such a simple, honest will, and Jen was like him, and better in many ways. If anyone had the power to lift the fog and confusion that hung over humanity, Jen did. And from the moment of his rebirth, Maewyn had resolved to push him out of the background and into plain view of the world. But he resisted all of her attempts, and Maewyn would not betray him. If he cared only for the welfare of the Shalane, then Maewyn would see her cared for. She hoped that one day he would notice the plight of his people and no longer remain silent and unseen. Unexpectedly, the Shalane rose, and after telling Dacen something Maewyn could not hear, she and Dacen left and walked along the trail through the camp. Maewyn rose and followed at a discreet distance. Wherever the Shalane passed, the songs and talk died out and the dances stopped as the celebrants stared at what seemed a wraith's shadow passing by. So heavy was the power of the Shalane's despair that it took a great deal to prompt a return to the festive mood from the suffocating pall that lingered behind her. Maewyn heard, "Cursed," roll off more than one soldier's tongue. The Shalane led Dacen, despite his objections, ahead of the camp and into the still blue night. Maewyn wondered at the Shalane's purpose, trusting Dacen to prevent her from doing anything rash. Maewyn couldn't fault the Shalane for wanting to get away from others, for jubilation only tortures the lonely and despairing. After passing the last sentries, the two of them continued on slowly for a few more minutes and stopped to sit on a long granite rock that was rooted in the ground. Their resting place commanded an expansive view of the canyon, dazzling and mysterious in the moonlight. A low fog hung over the river that roared through the gorge below, the mist threading through low-lying trees. Maewyn worked to get closer to the pair, using all her skill to be silent. Getting her bearings, she calculated that Jen slept not 75 yards farther down the trail, and was thankful the Shalane hadn't pressed on. The widowed queen sat motionless for nearly an hour, the noise from the camp behind them waning almost completely as the night deepened and grew colder. Dacen fidgeted restlessly, standing abruptly from time to time to pace back and forth or to stand uneasily by her. The three moons bathed them in light, and a cool southern breeze washed the scent of campfires and pine trees over them. But Maewyn knew that however tranquil the surroundings, before her was agony and struggle. Even at a distance, Maewyn could sense the Shalane's pain. Whatever the Shalane felt exuded from her, the dark smoke of a smouldering soul. "Shalane, please," Dacen, distressed, said at last. "I know you grieve for your mother, but you cannot go on like this. I can hardly bear it."
"You are right. I cannot go on like this," the Shalane agreed, voice distant.
Before Dacen could think to reply, the Shalane uncovered her face. Even in the poor light, Dacen winced and looked away.
"So how do you find me, Dacen? A proper queen? One you shall loathe and keep hidden away? Look at me!"
Dacen turned his gaze toward her with effort. "Shalane, you know I would have you even if you, well, even if you—"
"Come closer, Dacen. Look at my face. Closer!"
Dacen reluctantly complied. Maewyn knew what would come next and rose as the Shalane breathed on her protector's face. Dacen collapsed in a heap over the rock, landing with an uncomfortable thud. The Shalane immediately stood and cast aside her cloak and veil. Maewyn sneaked forward as the queen turned toward the canyon. She wore the same dress she had worn to greet Mikkik at Echo Hold. While not close to its original splendor, the Shalane had obviously cleaned and repaired it recently. The white fabric caught the moonlight, as did her eyes, but her skin was twisted and burned. Her hair, once a brilliant blonde, fell dull, tangled and thin around her shoulders. Maewyn approached slowly, and as she feared, the Shalane walked purposefully to the precipice of the deep divide. The young woman turned her face to the sky, a tear reflecting the moonlight as it ran down the black whorls and warps of the skin on her face. The Shalane cried silently for some time before steeling herself. Maywin waited just behind the rock, where Dacen lay unconscious, arguing within herself about what she should do and whether or not it would work to deflect the Shalane from her purpose. But as the Shalane turned her gaze from the heavens to the canyon floor below, Maywin thought of Jen and spoke. "I can give you a reason to live." The Shalane startled and fell backward before turning to peer into the darkness.
"Who is there?" the Shalane asked. "Just let me be."
Maywin emerged from behind the rock and into moonlight, face sympathetic but stern.
"You must come with me now, Shalane. I have something to show you." "Just go, Maywin," the Shalane cried. "Let me be done with it. My time is over."
Maywin walked forward casually, trying not to alarm the fallen queen.
"Listen to me, Shalane. After seeing what I have to show you, if you still want to take your life, then I will let you. Such a practice is common among the elves, although they do it to pass on from one joy to another, rather than to escape the world out of despair. But I insist that you come with me. It is not far." "What could you show me that could possibly make any difference? Will you do what my mother did and tell me to gaze upon the brave soldiers wounded to protect me because they believe in me? I doubt there is one man in this camp who would throw his life away for me now. If that is all you have, Maywin, then begone."
Maywin stooped down and forced the Shalane to look her in the eye.
"I will show you a soldier, but one who has already thrown his life away for you. Come with me."
Maywin extended her hand, and after a moment the Shalane, face questioning, grasped it and stood. The Shalane's hand felt scarred and rough, and when the half-elf took it, ash-coloured skin flaked off and fell to the ground. Maywin sorrowed at this evidence of the Shalane's plight, wondering what it meant. She walked on the side of the trail closest to the cliff, forcing the Shalane away from it, and held to her hand under the pretense of helping her along, even though the ample moonlight along the naked edge of the cliff outlined the trail clearly, even to human vision.
"I must ask you to try to be quiet when we approach, and not to speak. He is weary from the battle today, and we need to let him rest. There are other complications as well. This may be hard for you, but if it will help you seek life, then I am willing."
Maywin guided her off the main path, stepping softly among the old trees, careful to lead the Shalane over the cushion of pine needles and avoid the twigs and branches that would announce their approach. The camp lay in a small hollow just over a low protrusion of white granite, well hidden from the trail and prying eyes. As they crested, Maywin stopped the Shalane and pointed downward. Jen lay to their left, reclined against the lee side of the rock. The moonlight exposed the profile of his face, the shallow arrow cut running across his cheek. Maywin turned and watched the Shalane's countenance. It was apathetic, with a tinge of disappointment.
"This is the woodsman you travel with, Amos," the Shalane whispered flatly, turning to go. "What does he have to do with me?" "Look more closely, Shalane," Maywin prompted, pulling her back around. "He has a beard and longer hair. But you know this man. Step closer if you can do it quietly. He is quite spent and should not wake if you are careful."
The Shalane squinted and took two tentative steps forward. At that moment, a wind approached, rushing down the mountain from the east. As it blew through the clearing, Jen stirred and turned his face toward them in sleep. The bending trees let in a momentary shaft of moonlight that ran along the blade he embraced across his breast, handled by his head. And that was enough. Maywin watched as the Shalane's eyes widened and her hand slowly rose to her mouth. Maywin took her arm and led her away quickly, half carrying her as she stumbled about in a daze, shaking. Once back to the trail, Maywin helped her to sit, watching as tears ran down her face. Her emotion was difficult to read, her eyes alternating between surprise and fear. It took some time before the young woman could speak.
"It's impossible. I watched him die. I felt his cold skin and laid his sword in his lifeless arms. It cannot be him. How can you know this isn't some trick of the enemy?"
Maywin removed her own cloak and lifted her leather shirt, showing Shalane the spiral scar across the top of her chest, a scar the Shalane had seen burned into every one of her protectors. I had Aethrys do it when we were forced to leave him behind in Eldaluri Mora. I felt his death. I felt his return to life. And I rejoiced when he joined our besieged camp. It is he. He has been with the army for days. Our escaping the beetles was his work. All the little miracles the men are talking about today were his doing. The strategy I presented to the council for our most recent battle came from him. And when the precipice collapsed this afternoon, it was no act of God or nature, it was Jen's. It completely exhausted him to do it.
But he must hate me, the Shalane exclaimed. How can he bear to look at me? What must he think of the nothing I am, of his dying for a failed wretch?
What? Maewyn had not expected this. How can you ask such a question? Why do you think he came to this camp? For me? For your mother? For the armies of men? He came to watch over you. He blames you for nothing at Echo Hold. He feels you yet have a role to play, but I doubt he even cares for that. I know little of what the race of men thinks is love, but I have seen what I think it is. Jen has done and is determined to do anything in his power to see you safe. He is a god among men who has forsaken his own glory for the right to serve you.
But
what? Maewyn interrupted, irritation rising. I have never seen a man give as much for any woman as he has given for you. And with what reward? Does he have your tender embrace? Your sweet words? Does he get power, fame, or regard? Will it be his hand instead of Dacen's that you take? No. He walks ignored and unknown, and he cares for nothing but to restore your happiness. How can you doubt his regard for you? What further proof do you need of his love, and what further proof could he possibly give?
There is a way I can know, the Shalane said, now calm. Lead me to him again.
I cannot. He instructed me never to tell anyone who he was, especially you. I cannot chance his waking. I have already gone against his wishes.
Why would he not want me to know? The Shalane asked, sounding hurt.
He feared discovery, which you know would be disastrous to him and what is left of this army. If Mikik knew he lived, he would pull every creature and man at his command between Rugoth and the ruins of Lalmanar and send them south to hunt him, forcing Jen to flee from you to keep you safe. He also felt that you knowing would prevent you from fully seeking happiness in other matters.
Marrying Dacen.
Yes, he knows you love Dacen and doesn't want to complicate your relationship with him. The Shalane turned away to hide her emotion, and Maewyn waited until she composed herself, wondering what she was feeling.
I have been truly cursed for that lie, the Shalane finally said.
And before Maewyn could ask what she meant, the Shalane continued.
You must take me to him. I swear I will not wake him, but I must know something, something I cannot afford to doubt.
Maewyn considered the risk for several long moments before nodding her assent and leading the Shalane back to where Jen slept.
I must touch him, but only lightly, the Shalane reassured. It will only take a moment. If he is as exhausted as you say, he won't wake.
Maewyn feared ruin. Jen would never trust her again if he woke and discovered the Shalane there. The Shalane approached him carefully. Maewyn examined Jen's face, on guard for any sign he might wake, but from the rise and fall of his chest she knew he still slept deeply. The Shalane crouched at his side and stretched forth a trembling, scarred hand to touch his exposed arm lightly. Immediately the wound on Jen's face healed, but Maewyn saw something else, the skin on the Shalane's hand turning pale and smooth. Maewyn again pulled her away and led her back toward the trail. The Shalane wept for joy, hand over her heart as if it had just beat for the first time. Gradually, the skin on her face healed, her back and shoulders straightened, her eyes brightened and her hair regained its color and thickness. Maewyn was stunned at the Shalane's restored majesty and beauty, and for a moment the queen shone so brightly that she cast a perceptible light around her. Sinking to her knees, the Shalane looked heavenward with gratitude, face humble and happy. The light around her gradually faded, though Maewyn could still sense a brilliancy around her even after the transfiguration ended.
Thank you, Maewyn, the Shalane said, standing to embrace her.
Maewyn returned it awkwardly, though with satisfaction at seeing life in the Shalane's eyes.
I will not betray you. I will act as if I never knew him, but you must introduce him to me. I cannot live and ignore him.
I do not think that would be wise, Maywin counseled. He is perceptive.
Do not worry, the Shalane reassured her. I have a good reason to wear the veil now, and I've had to act like I didn't love him before. You cannot deny me this, so do not try. Be assured, however, that I will not tell him what you have done. I owe you a great debt.
Let us away from here, Maywin ordered, ignoring the Shalane's request. He can still sense you, and if he wakes he will know you are near, and I will have no lie to tell that will satisfy.
Yes, the Shalane agreed. Let's go.
We shouldn't leave Dacen draped over a rock all night.
The next day, word gradually spread of the Shalane's transformation, and for those who longed for a sign that the fortunes of their poor party had truly changed, the Shalane was its revelation. Ethrys and Lord Kildan stood amazed and pleased, all smiles when they saw her the next morning. Just as strongly as darkness had exuded from her before, light and joy did so now.
"What happened, dear child?" Ethrys asked, embracing her.
"Eldaloth revealed hope to me again. I know now that all is not lost, that another opportunity awaits me, awaits us all, to make things right."
And though they pressed her to be more forthcoming, she simply told them that she could not explain it. Everywhere she went that day, a beaming Dacen behind her, bows and pleas for healing and blessing replaced the guarded whispering of the days before. With delight she shared her returned talent with the war-weary and wounded men, leaving in her wake soldiers with gratitude on their faces and hearts that would push forward when feet threatened to fail. Lord Kildan let them take their rest and start late. Maywin took the lead at the head of the column, marking a path for them to follow.
"What happened last night?" a happy but puzzled Jen asked after seeing the Shalane for himself.
"She and Dacen left camp," Maywin said. "I followed them out onto the ridge. She cast the spell to make him sleep. I can only surmise that what she did was plead with God. She was alone for an hour, and then she changed. I can hardly describe it, but it was wonderful. I was a bit nervous, however, as she was not 75 yards from where you slept."
Jen smiled. "It was good to see her like her old self, like she was before her miserable wedding," he said. "Pity I could not have watched last night instead of you. I wish I could question her about it."
"Everyone who can has asked her. She merely says that God gave her hope again, though most suspect a great deal is missing from her explanation. Whatever happened to her, the morale of the soldiers is the highest it has been since before Echo Hold. We need to use that to our advantage to cover some miles. I still reckon it will be 3 days before we get off the canyon ridge."
"I agree. Push hard. If we can make it to Rugoth, we can see what we have left with which to mount a defence. The Shalane and Dacen can wed to unite Tol Nor and Rugoth, though it won't do much good if we can't convince everyone that the being they think is Eldaloth is Mikik. I doubt the Shalane is in much humour to marry. She just lost her first husband, and her mother rides in the company of Aethon on her way to Echo Hold, and some unknown fate."
Jen raised his eyebrows in surprise.
"An odd observation from you, though I think you are wrong. The Shalane certainly needs no time to mourn Shirtan, and I would think wedding Dacen would serve as comfort for her losses."
"In that case," Maywin said, "leave her in his care and turn your abilities toward greater things. I again tell you that it is you who needs to lead this people. No one has greater power, and because of Cairn's training stones, no one has more wisdom. Why do you continue this vigil of the Shalane? Others can do it."
"Because," Jen replied with some heat, "Mikik still wants her. Mirel's little ruse will not last for long. Aethon's elderfair may not know the difference, but others of his agents will. If Mikik wants the Shalane, then she is in danger, the kind that mere sword fighters cannot protect her from. The restoration of her beauty points to a part she may yet play."
"See reason, Jen."
"No more, Maywin. My mind is fixed. Lead them out. I'm going back to my vigil, whether you think it necessary or not."
For the next 3 days, they marched hard. The miles meant nothing to the Shalane, who spent every moment scheming ways she could chance an encounter with Jen. But he was too clever in his avoidance, and Maywin was unwilling to offer any assistance in the matter, fearing discovery. The Shalane knew the brand on Jen's chest let him know of her approach, so not even stealth could avail her. Every time she walked in his direction, No matter how she tried to appear as if she were headed somewhere else, he would turn and walk off at an odd angle. But now that she knew who he was, she saw him everywhere. She wondered at how she hadn't noticed, even in her despair, his continual, watchful presence. He was skilled at masking his intentions and his movements, but she saw only his face in the crowd now, and it required discipline not to search for it at every opportunity. Every day she longed to speak with him, remembering the comfort their conversations gave her as she travelled in the wagon and as they hiked alone toward Eldaluri Mora. She just needed a chance at his ear and some contrivance to give her an excuse to talk with him more frequently, something she hadn't quite worked out yet. She kept hoping that Maywin would invite him to the morning councils she took with Lord Kildan, General Harband, and Ethris. But the half-elf appeared firm in her resolve to be unhelpful. By the end of the third day, the Shalane felt very cross and was quite short with everyone, including Dacen, who'd been jubilant and painfully affectionate since her transformation. On the morning of the fourth day, however, Maywin unwittingly provided just the opportunity the Shalane had waited for. The company had descended steadily for 2 days, and Maywin announced the evening before that they should find the plain the next day, and from there the Black River that would lead them to Rugoth. As was her custom, the half-elf left before first light to scout ahead. At daybreak, the Shalane, Ethris, and Lord Kildan met as they always did, but for the first time since they started their journey, Maywin was late. Out of the corner of her eye, the Shalane noticed Jen sitting casually against an oak tree eating bread not 30 feet from her. Maywin's tardiness provided the opening she needed. Turning to Lord Kildan, she announced, "I will speak with the man she travels with, Amos, was it, and see if he knows anything about her whereabouts." With Gerund in tow, she strode quickly toward Jen. As she started walking in his direction, he pulled the brim of his hat down to hide his face. As it became apparent that she approached him specifically, he rose to go as naturally as he could. The Shalane's heart pounded as she approached. "Excuse me, Amos," she called to him, subduing the excitement in her voice and trying to sound as if she were addressing a stranger. He turned to go. "Sir? Amos?" she called more loudly. He stopped, and she almost laughed at his obvious discomfort as he slowly turned to face her. When he did, he kept his face and eyes down, executing a bow and leaning on a quarterstaff. "Yes, Holiness?" he asked. The Shalane completely underestimated the effect that hearing his voice again would have on her. It was deep, calm, and wonderfully familiar. Wherever that voice spoke was her peace, her home. "M'lady," he said as she paused, and the fear that he thought she recognized him gave her the ability to tame her emotions and continue. "I am sorry," she said, "but I didn't understand what you had said as you were talking at the ground. You are Amos, the one who travels with Maywin, correct?"
"Yes, Holiness," he answered.
"Well, look up, Amos, or shall I lie on the ground at your feet so I can see your face?" He looked up reluctantly, though he did not meet her eye, focusing his gaze behind her. Now that she could get a good look at him, she marveled at his face, skin smooth and free of scars, but undeniably his. The long hair and close-cropped beard lent him a few more years, and despite his rustic attire, the intelligence of eye imbued him dignity and nobility, as she remembered. "But I've interrupted your breakfast. Please sit and eat. I just have a few brief questions for you concerning Maywin."
"Thank you, Holiness," he said, returning his quarterstaff to the ground and sitting with his back against the tree. The Shalane realized that this gave him the advantage of hiding his face again, so she surprised him and Gerund by taking a seat beside him.
"Please do not be uncomfortable," she soothed. "Think of me as just another woman. I'm quite tired of people treating me as if I were a spider who might bite or a bird who might fly away. Be at ease. I promise I mean you no harm."
"Forgive me. I am but a simple woodsman, m'lady."
"You are forgiven. My questions are these. First," she said, "the council wonders if Maywin thinks we will make the river before dark, and if so, if we should camp close to it."
"We should arrive at the river before midday," he said evenly, as he rummaged through his leather bag for some bread and nuts, keeping his face away from her as much as possible. "Our camping situation will be dictated by the disposition of the surrounding area."
"What?" she asked, amused.
"Did I say something amiss?" he inquired, taken aback.
"Well, not really. You said, our camping situation
will be dictated by the disposition of the surrounding area. Now, I've not had the pleasure of knowing many simple woodsmen, but that sounded like something Lord Kildan would say.
She could almost see him chiding himself.
You don't happen to be a general in disguise. We could use another good one.
No, m'lady. The second question?
Maywin is late, returning from her usual morning scout. We wondered if you knew if she intended to go farther ahead than usual, and if she might be in some danger.
He pulled his hat down.
She had intended to go forward far enough to see the plain, though she was unsure of the exact distance. I believe she wanted to see if we would find any danger there. She may be delayed for that reason.
Should we worry?
I do not think so. Perhaps I should go and see if the sentries have had any sign of her.
He shifted his worn leather satchel to his lap and started to repack his food. The Shalane thought hard for a way to stall his escape.
Perhaps you should, she said before he could stand. But may I ask if you would be capable of leading the column forward in her absence? I assume that since you are a woodsman with a staff and a bow, rather than a wood axe and rope, that you earned your title by something other than cutting and hauling lumber?
I am not as skilled as Maywin, but I could substitute in her absence.
Excellent. Make your inquiries to the sentries and return and report to me what you find. If she is not seen inside a half hour, we will move without her, you in the lead.
He left quickly, and the Shalane watched him go as she returned to Ethrys and Kildan. While happy that she had finally heard his voice, she felt thoroughly unsatisfied. She could already tell the pretended unfamiliarity would quickly wear thin and annoy her. She wanted a return to the way it had been, and she wanted it now. She could not dissemble forever, and she wondered when and how she could tell him that she knew and loved him. At the same time, there would be no way to visit and talk with him if he maintained his nondescript role as woodsman. But how could she elevate him without calling attention to who he was or revealing her regard for him? Dacen stood in the circle when she and his brother returned to the council. Her amorous protector beamed at her, taking her hand enthusiastically and kissing it. The affection in his eyes pained her, and the expectation in his countenance filled her with dread. He saw no obstacle now to their wedding, and by the way his father smiled at him and her, he didn't either.
"Well, Your Grace," Lord Kildan began before Dacen could say anything. What is his name again? What does he say?
Amos is his name, Lord Kildan, the Shalane answered. He told me that Maywin intended to scout forward until she saw the plain, although she was unsure of the distance. He is capable of leading us forward if she does not return soon.
Really?
Ethrys said, jumping ahead of Lord Kildan.
I've been meaning to ask her the origin of her friend. I've never known Maywin to consort much with anyone, though she did seem fond of Jen. Doesn't it seem the wholesome sort? Lord Kildan interjected. I've seen him skulking about, hat low on his face. I don't remember him in any of the battles we've survived.
I've noticed him lately as well, Dacen added. And if I noticed him, that means he is nearly always close to the Shalane, which gives me concern. However, I must trust that one as old and as wise as Maywin would be careful in her choice of associates.
He seems quite harmless, the Shalane commented offhandedly.
Seeming and being are quite different, Your Holiness, Ethrys counselled.
Yes, the Shalane replied, but I am not a complete failure as a judge of character. It may well be that Maywin set him to watch over me while she blazes the trail for us. Besides you and the Dark Guard, I believe Maywin feels the most responsible for my safety.
Lord Kildan and Dacen objected fervently, and the Shalane rolled her eyes up into her head while they proclaimed their utmost interest and concern for her welfare.
Ethrys, Lord Kildan ordered, ask Maywin directly the next time you see her. I want to know if she did order this protection. If not, then some action may need to be taken.
Ask me what? Maywin inquired flatly, leaning on her bow just outside the circle.
Sweat ran down her face, though she didn't appear to be labouring. The Shalane searched for Jen, disappointed at not finding him nearby.
Ah, Maywin, Lord Kildan exclaimed. It is a small matter concerning the man Amos. But first, what report?
The way is clear to the plain, as near as I can tell. We should be to the Black River by dark and Blackshire Castle by midday tomorrow.
Excellent news. Gerund, prepare the troops to march.
Gerund bowed and left.
Now to Amos. Dacen says he's seen him near the Shalane quite frequently, and we wonder how well you know him, and if you'd ordered him to watch the Shalane.
If Maywen was surprised by the question, she didn't show it.
I know him better than I know any of you. I did ask him to watch over her, because—
Do you not trust the Dark Guard and me, Dacen interrupted, obviously offended, to provide an adequate defence? I must object.
I could hardly see how one charged to protect her could object to one more pair of eyes watching in her behalf,
Maywen answered, annoyance plain.
Now, if I may finish. I did ask him to watch over her, because he is a skilled woodsman, and can hear and see things you do not know to look or listen for.
Seems a bit young to have enough skill or experience to lend much aid,
Dacen returned contemptuously.
I'm sure, Maywen said, that people said the same when you were raised to the protectorship at such an early age.
Dacen turned red, and the Shalane hoped he would hold his tongue before Maywen was forced to completely humiliate him.
At my age, you all seem a bit too young for anything. But may I assure you all that Amos has the best of intentions toward the Shalane, and is a capable woodsman and an adequate fighter.
The Shalane smiled at her whopping understatement. Thankfully, Maywen's assertions put an end to all argument.
I'm satisfied, Lord Kildan said. Lead us forward, Maywen. I would like to get somewhere more civilized and defensible soon.